You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I'll let Bobby Warsaw tell me how I did it.
I think he's the philosopher of football.
I'd like to have some more derbies.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I like it. I liked it a lot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Bobby Warshaw, David Goss, Susanna Collins. As you texted me, Susanna, before this show, what day is it?
I don't know.
Where are we? What's happening? My voice is gone. I thought very seriously about it.
I'm digging this. I like this timbre.
You should have this guy host.
Yeah,
he'll probably
seriously.
Sound better than
yeah,
you.
I feel like a blues musician.
Yeah, you do
Bobby,
sound. You should be in like a speakeasy
yeah,
right
oh, yeah.
now.
Just... I smoked a lot over the years. My larynx is just absolutely destroyed.
What did you just call it?
Larynx?
Is it a larynx?
Well, there's a good classic
a
extra
start.
Time moment right there.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. MLS Cup is coming.
On that note.
We know who's playing in it now. Dave, if you want to just take over from me hosting-wise, at any moment you may do so. Just, you know, tap me at some
yeah,
point.
Yeah, Tuesday here. Night, one of the biggest upsets in conference finals history. The Seattle Sounders knocking off LAFC at the Bank of California Stadium. Susanna was there.
Sure was.
I didn't believe it could happen, so I apologize for that one. Or glad to be proven wrong.
I
and then
I'd
on
believed,
Wednesday night,
because you would have walked away. Anybody who did believe and put money where their mouth is,
yeah,
had like plus 600 odds.
Cleaned up pretty big. That's why. That's why Weeby's been in the back clubs.
Yeah, I'm like, how much?
Just working cigars. And, and working odds.
I'm all about vice.
And then on Wednesday night, it lives. Toronto FC continues to be one of the classes in Major League Soccer. They knock off Atlanta United at the Mercedes-Benz when, again, I think no one thought it was possible.
Probably not.
And now, for the third time in 4 years, we're doing Seattle versus Toronto, but this time in Seattle on November 10th, 3 p.m. Eastern time on ABC, Univision, and...
TUDN, TSN, TVA.
And so noon local time. And personally, I'd like to start with, I don't understand the again take. I'm pretty sure on Toronto's side, there'll be potentially four starters that started in 2017. And on the Seattle side, I think at most it could be five. So to me, they're different stars. They're different teams. They're different groups on a different site, different location. I'm extremely excited for this final.
I am excited, but how can you not get the not this again?
Because it's
feeling?
Not Josie. It's not.
Well, it might be Josie. It's not. No, it could be Josie.
It's not Clint Dempsey. It's not Sebastian Giovinco. It's not Chad Marshall. It's probably not even Roman Torres.
It's the same clubs. It's the same fan bases. It's many of the same players. Look, I'm as excited
also,
as you are.
It's
I
a
am.
Different stadium. It's
but
a
how
totally
can you
different
not understand
setting.
That feeling, man. People want variety. People wanted LAFC. Maybe they didn't because in the mailbag they danced all over their graves. I mean, Atlanta fans wanted Atlanta. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe everybody did want this.
To me, though, the way it's setting up, I covered both those games, and I don't feel like I'm rehashing a single storyline, except for that they've done this before. It doesn't feel like the exact same. Can Giovinco do it in the cold? Who's going to show up top for Seattle? Is Seattle going to have a shot on goal? It's not all the same storylines. It's completely different in a different location. Also, it'll be a little bit warmer, hopefully.
Oh, golly. You jinxed us.
Potentially, but I don't even care. I'm here to freeze it out. I've also never been to a legit game in Seattle.
So. Oh, it's going
to
be fun.
No, Seattle's going to do this right. We're going to talk to Steve Zakuani about that. You know him, of course, from his days as a Sounder and now as an analyst for the club. Awesome guy. He'll stop by to chat with us a little bit. Bobby, can we bring you in here?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel, man? How do you feel after watching these games, after six match days in the playoffs, now that you know what this is, and when will you start to, I want to say, gloat about your Toronto FC takes? Because I was sitting there watching this game last night, and I was like, Toronto FC are going to do it. I'm like, nobody believed in Toronto. And then I was like, oh, one person did believe in Toronto. He tried to tell us over and over and over, but this was the most dangerous team in the East, and it was you.
I appreciate that, Andrew. I really do, but I can't.
I got it right in the end, but for the wrong reason, so I can't take credit for that. Because I thought that they would make it this far because of sheer talent, and the same reason that Atlanta made it to the Eastern Conference Final despite not playing well, for the same reason the Seattle Sounders beat RSL and Dallas on their way to the Western Conference Final, that I thought that the pure talent of Jozy Altidore and Omar Gonzalez to go with Michael Bradley and Alejandro Pozuelo and Chris Mavinga would make the difference. And then Jozy and Omar are out, Greg Vanney steps up and creates a whole new game plan, and that's how they make it to MLS Cup. So it happened in the end, but not for the way I thought it would.
Credit to you for making that clarification. We will.
Hey, I'm just saying, Andrew, I'm willing to clarify things.
Yeah.
I'm willing.
Bobby's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. If someone asks for you to be the person who explains
things,
you're willing to step into the, you know, into this sense of responsibility and get it done. We will play that clip from Brian Schmetzer and React in just a little bit.
What clip?
You didn't.
Unfamiliar.
There's a clip? Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. Let's start with LAFC Seattle, because this is what many people are calling the biggest upset in the history of the MLS Cup playoffs. And I mentioned the odds there, and it's sort of a joke, you know, whatever. But also, it is very real that bookmakers and people that presumably make money off getting these things right had the Sounders at basically like 6-1.
Yep.
Like no chance, which is interesting because there was no Mark Anthony Kay. LAFC had not been at their previous sort of like unstoppable high. They'd been on, you know, on the mountaintop, but it wasn't like they were looking down, thumbing their noses Monty Python style. Like, you can't get up here. We're going to be here forever. Is it the biggest upset in the history of the MLS Cup playoffs?
I can't answer that right
now.
Well,
then why did I ask the question?
I would say in conference finals. Because there's been low seed, high seed upsets in the first round or earlier.
I mean, it is one seed, two seed. You're right about that.
But in the conference finals, because of the difference going into it, which was shown by the odds, the expectation for LAFC against Seattle, where it stood, and I would argue it's the greatest performance because LAFC didn't play poorly because they didn't show up. They played poorly because Seattle played phenomenal. Seattle had an idea of how they wanted to play. They executed it defensively. They executed it in possession. They finished opportunities that weren't simple tap-in opportunities. Their star players performed. Their glue guys performed. This is, I think, outside of the first six games last year when Jordan Morris came back from injury, the best soccer I've ever seen him play. Coming in field, taking guys on, pulling the team around him, or pulling the defense around him to find guys, and then the way that goal gets set up, Lodeiro then goes, floats out wide. It was, I think, the best game Raul Ruiz Diaz has ever played. He's a pure finisher, but he doesn't do anything else. This game, he's dropping back, linking up.
Man. He is a pure finisher, but like, they don't get to those places on the field without some of his hold-up play, no?
He doesn't do as much of it as most guys in Major League Soccer. It's the same with Joseph. Joseph's an elite finisher. This year, he's done more in build-up, but the last 2 years, he hadn't. But it doesn't take away from the quality of player. But Ruiz Diaz showed up for this one. Took guys on when he had to, relieved pressure. So I just think across the board, from coaching down to performance to energy to everything, this Seattle performance is one of the best I've ever seen in MLS.
Bobby, we'll ask you how the Sounders did it. But first, I want to kind of understand what it felt like in the building, Susanna. You were there.
I was.
And I felt, watching it, and we were commenting on this as we were preparing for Matchday Central and watching the game and just on TV. Just didn't feel the same. It felt like muted. The whole thing kind of felt muted. We couldn't figure out if that was just Seattle, you know, taking the game and kind of being the aggressors after, maybe even before the free kick goal by Tuesta, but certainly after, or if there was just something off, something missing.
I would agree with everything that you just said, having been at the match against the Galaxy. There was, I mean, it was electric. Like, from the fans, I mean, even down to the TIFO. Like, the TIFO for this game, I was like, could we have done a little better for this one?
Ooh.
It just seemed,
shots
fired. Just saying, I'm just
saying.
They
had a better one earlier in the playoffs.
No, it was,
which was magnificent.
And this was, having watched this game in person and having watched them play against the Galaxy and seeing how emotional those guys were after that win to finally have that monkey off their back. I mean, they were spent. They were, you know, just exhilarated, but like, you could see how much it took out of them. And I was nervous for LAFC heading into this matchup against Seattle for that reason, because I was like, was that sort of like their emotional high? In fact, I had spent some time with some of the LAFC supporters ahead of the Galaxy match. And one of them said to me, you know, if we're able to beat the Galaxy and we don't win cup, I'm still going to be okay. Like, that's how much they cared about beating the Galaxy. And so I think that there is something to be said about this sort of emotional letdown that happened entering this game against Seattle. They just didn't seem as sharp. They seemed a little bit off the pace. So Atuesta scores that free kick goal. And I was like, well, okay, you know, here we go. This is a great start. But then the same thing happened as in the Galaxy game. Seattle come right back, and they, to Goss's point, they had such a strong game plan in place. They knew exactly how they wanted to play LAFC. And whereas in the Galaxy game, you saw this fight, this just like incredible spirit and fight from LAFC. That goal, when Seattle equalized, it took the air out of the building and it took the air out of the players, and they just couldn't kick it back into that second gear. And Seattle played them so well, and they were so frustrated by them. There was just nothing. You didn't get the sense that they were going to come back in this one. And I was kind of waiting, hoping to see more goals. I was like, this could still go 3-2 LAFC at this point. And it just never happened. And a huge amount of credit to Seattle.
So I would say on momentum, Seattle came out and played better. Mm-hmm. And then Atuesta scores off a free kick. And you're like, well, that's it.
Yeah.
If you outperform LAFC for 20 minutes on the road and you're down 1-0, mm-hmm. that's... So then I agree. Then Seattle comes back, continues to play the way they did, scores the goal. And you're like, oh, maybe it's all not just going to click into place.
Yeah. Well, and Bob Bradley talked about it after the match. Somebody asked him if he thought that there was sort of an emotional letdown after this game. And he was like, he denied it, of course. And he was like, you would have to ask the players. But I think everybody in that building, everybody watching that match would say that there was something missing. There wasn't the intensity that there was in that game against the Galaxy. And yeah, I mean, you just have to tip your cap to Seattle, to be honest.
I mean, they were businesslike. I mean, they knew exactly what they wanted to do. They did it. They knew their roles. Lodeiro's somehow still underrated. I mean, he doesn't always put up maybe the numbers that some others do, but in the big moments in the postseason, I think it's 7 goals and 4 assists. Raul Ruiz Diaz in the postseason, it's 6 goals in 5 games. When it's time, they arrive. And the Sounders, I feel like over the last couple years, maybe since 2016 and then 2017, their regular seasons haven't always been like universally up. It's been kind of up and down at times for them. And it's like, are they as good as you think they are? And then in the playoffs, they always show up. They're proving that they should be in this top echelon. That maybe if you didn't think that they were, you sort of forgot about Nico Lodeiro being a 27-year-old from River Plate who's an Uruguay international, still. Raul Ruiz Diaz being a Peruvian international.
Not the top echelon still. As a club, they're the top echelon. Okay. Not this season. There's a one echelon
that.
And had one team.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, but as an organization, saying, they never left the top.
Like in an MLS, I'm looking at MLS and I'm tearing it out. And I'm saying, in my top echelon, mm-hmm. it's probably these four teams, maybe NYCFC and MLS 3.0, but it is these four teams at least right now. And LAFC are kind of the new arrivals. They're the ones that are like, oh, we're here to stay. We want to be on top. But the other ones have the silverware. And then after the game, you know, Brian Schmetzer and Sebi Salazar is getting stuff out of folks these days after games.
Wrestling conference be lit right now.
I know. Here's what Brian had to say.
Coach, a lot of intensity in this building. How are you feeling after that match?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
How did you do it?
Well, I'll let Bobby Warsaw tell me how I did it.
And that brings us to the part of the show where, fortunately for extra time,
we have him right here.
Bobby Warsaw.
Wow.
Here to help
we don't even have to
can
wait.
I just, before I let you go, can I just say that your column after this was very good. It was very to the point. It did explain Thanks. How the Sounders did it. So choose your path to explanation here.
Ooh, that comment. That's a comment you meant. Okay. Oh, yeah, so first, Sounders were phenomenal. The players were phenomenal. Brian Schmetzer and Gonzalo Pineda set up an excellent game plan. All credit to them. It seems to me that Brian Schmetzer took exception with two parts, right? One is my doubt and skepticism about the Sounders over the last three years, as they have continued to do well. I thought it would fall at some point. Just like we see from teams who win, at some point your systematic approach to the game catches up to you. They've proven that wrong. All credit to them. The second part was about whether they should be scared for this game. So let me ask you guys this. When you are scared, what is the first thing you do when there's a fire coming toward your house, when you're worried somebody's, what do you do? What's your first?
You protect yourself.
You protect yourself.
Yeah.
You plan. So when we think about the characteristics of the Seattle Sounders in this game, were they more disciplined? Were they more combative? Were they more prepared? Yes. Those were the main three traits that came with the way this team played. Why do you do those things? Because you have the natural reaction prior to the game to being scared. And they had a more detailed, focused, disciplined game plan than they have had in the last 4 years. And that's not a knock. Right here, the Seattle Sounders are. They have made the MLS Cup three times in 4 years. They have finished second in the regular season three times in a row. And they do it their way. That is fine. If they had done it this time, that way, they would have gotten smashed. They finished 16 points behind LAFC. You know who else finished 16 points behind the team in front of them? Lille in France behind PSG. Is anybody talking about PSG playing anybody in France with the word parity? Absolutely not. Right? The goal differential was monstrous. Seattle were not anywhere near as good as LAFC. They still aren't. We can still say that LAFC are the better team. The Seattle Sounders happened to beat them on that day. Credit to them. They won this game because they had the most detailed, focused game plan they've had in 4 years. And I'm willing to say this. Anders back there, Seattle Sounders, you're welcome.
Do you think it was scared or concerned? Was it truly being scared?
You could use the word, listen, going, you could use the word respectful. For me, that's not enough. You legitimately had to be frightened out of your mind against this team that was 16 points better than you in the regular season. Right. And yes, they deserve their win. This was not a game lost by LAFC. This was a game won by the Seattle Sounders. But they won this game because they had the natural reaction that we are the inferior team. We need to play like the inferior team and find ways to create inefficiencies, which they did. My thought is, what if the Seattle Sounders did this for 34 games? What if they played with this focus, this discipline, this intensity for 34 games? Could they have put up 70, 72 points? Maybe.
I'm trying to mull through that right now.
I would say the one thing for Seattle this year was they just weren't healthy for a large stretch of the season. So they didn't have.
So what? It isn't that even more incentive?
Agreed. I'm just saying in terms of getting to 72 points and all that,
okay.
It makes That's it fair. Hard. I don't disagree with anything you said. I think the point stands, which is Seattle couldn't roll out there and say, we're as good as LAFC toe-to-toe, so we'll just play this game straight up and see what happens. To Bobby's point, they had to come in and say, we are not as good as LAFC. How can we beat them? What are the inefficiencies we can create? What are the things we can take advantage of? And it's not how they played against FC Dallas postseason. Yeah. It's not how they played against RSL. So to Bobby's point, they changed what they did for this game, which you couldn't really anticipate because it's not something they've done a whole lot outside of maybe the one MLS Cup at Toronto that they won. And then it worked for them, which is awesome. So I guess Bobby gets to say you're welcome again.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's not necessarily fear. And I think that's maybe the scared line. That's maybe what Brian Schmetzer got riled up about or, you know, whatever else it is. I can't speak for Brian Schmetzer. He can get riled about whatever he wants. To me, it's more like in the moment when you look across, you know, the table, you say, you know what? Doing what I normally do, I'm probably not going to win this game. So is that fear or is
See, I don't think that what – Can I speak
for you?
Is
that being analytical?
Yeah, I love when you
speak
for me.
I'm going to speak for Bobby. That's not the reaction. I don't think I'm going to win this game. The reaction is, I'm going to get smoked. Which is different for professional sports anyone than they ever feel.
Do you think, but why would the Sounders feel like they were going to get smoked?
I don't think they did at all.
They were the largest underdogs for a reason.
I don't think that, I don't think that.
Don't revisionist history.
LAFC just gave up three goals to the Galaxy.
It doesn't matter.
Let me add a line.
Faded at the end of the regular season.
You barely beat RSL at home.
Let me add a line.
I mean, barely. They handled it pretty easily. RSL had Jack.
But this is the important distinction. And if you read the column, this was very clear. This was clearly a bunch of Seattle people who only saw the headline, which is another conversation in this world. But it was clear that you don't play scared. It's not that you don't think that you can beat them, that you don't have confidence. It's that your natural reaction when you look across the field at the team that finished 16 points ahead of you in the regular season and is just straight up way better than you right now needs to be, oh, crap, we need to do something. That is not a reaction that the Seattle Sounders have ever really had in their time. And credit to them for accomplishing what they've had. This was a singular, different scenario, a unique scenario to what they have ever experienced. And they only won because they had a different feeling heading into it.
So I think I agree with that.
I,
I think I agree with that part, which is you look across and it's not fear. It's sort of like.
Obviously, you don't take the field with fear.
Yeah,
nobody was suggesting you take the field with fear.
I'm not saying you're taking the field. I'm saying when you game plan, there's like an alarm bell that's like, ah, this is one of the few rare teams that if we expose ourselves the way we might in other games, are just going to like.
It's one game. Like, you have to win one game. They were preparing all week for LAFC. Brian Schmetzer is a very good coach. Seattle Sounders are a good team. They have playoff experience. Been there, done that. They know exactly how to win these types of games. And in that sense, I don't think I didn't get the sense from them at all that they were scared at all. In fact, they liked kind of being the underdog in this game. I think it took the pressure off of them. But they knew it was one. All they had to do was win one game. You know, it's not this two-leg situation. It's the new format. Win one game, have a solid game plan, stick to it. And they did exactly that. And I think that they were actually pretty, like, brimming with confidence entering this match, just from being around them.
They could brim with confidence because they knew they should be scared. They could game plan, and they could feel confident in their ability to execute the game plan.
Yes.
Mm. So it's like, you know, you're alarmed. You take a step back. You make a plan. Your odds may not be with you. But then when you execute that plan,
mm-hmm. And
the reason you have the plan is because you are alarmed.
Let's go to the flip side of this.
So that's maybe the word, and I know word choice is this stupid thing and people get super emotional about
maybe.
It.
I'm glad you've spent much time on it.
Now I feel stupid, but I feel like alarmed is the way I'm going with
it. Maybe I feel that all the time when I sit next to you.
Yeah. You feel stupid?
I feel
that's
that
nice
energy in this vicinity.
That's nice of you to say. Anything else you guys got before we get to talk to Steve Zakuani about what's upcoming for the Sounders?
You want to talk LAFC first in that game?
You know what? Actually, before we go to Steve, in the game, don't give me all the big picture stuff. Give me in the game.
In the game. So what the Sounders did well was they found a way to keep the field compact. And as Brian Schmetzer told Matt Pence for his article in The Athletic, that they didn't just want to sit back. If you sit back against LAFC from the start, you get smashed. It's a long 90 minutes. You're bound to give up a goal. They wanted to stay a little higher. A lot of teams, if they stay higher, they get stretched in between their lines. That's when Marc-Anthony Kay or Lee Wynn or Latif Blessing get the ball in the half turn, run at you, and you're done. Game over. What the Sounders were able to do was to keep their back four high. They could keep their back four high because who played number nine for LAFC, David?
Carlos Vela.
Does Carlos Vela want to run behind, or does he want to check?
Do I have to keep doing
it? No, you're sorry.
Thing?
They could squeeze the field. This is where Bob Bradley on his end messed it up. He should have read that. And the second part is that he kept his wingers, Diego Rossi and Brian Rodriguez, as pure wingers, right? A little bit like we see from Raheem Sterling or Rod Mahrez or Leroy Sané. Stay on the line, get it, run 1v1. It was the wrong choice. He needed to use them as wide forwards to run behind and stretch the field. Bob Bradley didn't adjust. The Sounders didn't have to adjust. And Brian Schmetzer totally got the better of that plan.
I think when Dio came on, there was a ball over the top that he took a long touch on or something. It was the first ball over the top of the game, which you go to the Galaxy game, within the first 7 minutes, Vela had probably earned a red card and a penalty on balls over the top. So it just didn't happen for them there. And it will be questioned, the Diamande stuff, of should he have started him, should he not have. I think the bigger one is he probably should have made either the substitution or the tactical change earlier than he did. There's no reason to start him. You are the best team for a reason. You just put up 5 goals against your rival. You have the firepower. Once it played out, which is one of the most fascinating things about this playoffs, was NYCFC and LAFC found different ways to beat teams in games consistently throughout the year, and they both panicked to make adjustments in the postseason, and it goes down to the one game. 45 minutes. You don't have 15 minutes to waste to be like, we'll do it at halftime. That's what we found out this year. You had to make that change early and be aggressive about what you needed to do because you don't have tomorrow and you don't have later on. And once both those teams got behind, they weren't able to create chances.
Who do we lay, not the blame, but sort of like when you analyze the tape or watch the game back, defensively for LAFC? Because they're not accustomed over the course of the year to giving up 3 goals, but they also hadn't got a shutout in like 10 games. So, you know, Segura comes out, tries to get the ball, boom.
Atuesta.
First goal.
Edward Atuesta, the worst game of the season. Specifically, he had to blow up both of those plays, right? One thing the Sounders did well, one thing that every team that wins big games does well is they foul, man. They kill the play. I mean, how many times did Arriaga lose a step to Vela and just hacksawed him, right? You've got to be able to kill plays. Both the Seattle second and third goals, I believe, came when Atuesta just missed a tackle in the middle of the field, didn't take the foul. Three passes later, Rui Diaz and Ladero score. Atuesta has to blow those up.
Is that
there was also then,
which is
Lodero's goal, Atuesta, and I don't know if it was K or not on the field. They drop into the back line in transition rather than sticking on top of the 18. It gives Lodero four or five yards.
All of these instances to me feel like. You know, we've talked about sort of the physicality, the competitiveness that you have to have in these. Was that little piece just lacking? And like during the regular season, as you go week to week, maybe you don't always have to have that when your talent level is just eons above.
But this is a problem they've had because this is why the Galaxy have beaten them over the last 2 years was transition moments, transition goals. And I was there for Rivalry Week this year. They beat San Jose 4-0, and they came out post-game and said, we struggled defending in transition. And winning 4-0, looking forward to the Galaxy, I said, well, what is it? Is it, you know, passive marking? Is it when to take the foul? And if you should, is it that last pass when you turn it over, the decision make take a shot? And they said, we're not really sure. So that has been their issue for 2 years. Whether in the regular season it kills you or not is different because of the focus and talent and the way teams play or the freedom of the game in a regular season because it's not 37 minutes, win or go home.
Yeah.
But it has been their problem, and it continued to be.
All right, well, we will talk about the L-word legacy and LAFC in just a second. But first, it's time to chat with
L-word.
Steve. Yeah, that's what, hey, I'm calling it that. Bob Bradley says it's not his favorite word. It wouldn't be. Right about now. Time to talk to Steve Zakuani. Of course, you know him from his years with the Sounders, now an analyst there. Seattle guy. Let's get him on the phone. Steve, what's up?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Let's just start with how you feel today. Got to feel pretty good. You're looking forward to an MLS Cup in Seattle, the first one in which the home team will play. What are the vibes like, man?
Hey, it's great. I think, after the team won at LAFC, knowing you're going to MLS Cup was good. But they still felt like there was some unfinished business. Like the people here really, really wanted to host the cup. You know, been there twice, but as their away team. So really was rooting for Toronto last night. And when Nick scored that goal, I mean, the cheers were as loud in Toronto as they were here in Seattle as well, I'm sure, because everyone really wanted to host the cup here. So you can imagine we're feeling pretty good. People are going crazy. My phone's blowing up for ticket requests. So we'll see how that goes.
Were you in LA, Steve?
I was in L.A., yeah.
I would like to know what happened after the game. How did the Sounders, how did you celebrate this?
It was a lot of fun. I watched the game, you know, right, because I hadn't been to that stadium yet, and I've got to say, atmosphere-wise, all of that, it was great. You know, their fans and what they've built there is great. But after the game went down on the pitch, you know, watched the boys lift the cup. My whole ownership group was there, coaches, the club did well because they flew down a lot of the front office staff as well. So it was more than just the players. It was the backroom staff as well. And then in the locker room, as you can imagine, you know, there were champagne showers and everybody was going crazy. I think the only guy that came prepared was Roman Torres. He's the only guy that had the goggles to block the champagne from his eyes. So he's probably the only one expected to win, I think, because everybody else didn't have that. But you can imagine the music was going great. Nico was into it and Jordan and everyone. And I think just from being close to the club, it was very well deserved because not many people gave the team a chance in that game, understandably so, but the way they did it just added to the celebration as well.
I'm pretty sure Roman Tar has been carrying those around since 2016.
Yeah.
Steve, you mentioned the ownership group, so I just want to throw out there, I'll be in market next week, so just let me know when me and Ciara should meet up for brunch. You can set it up and just shoot me a text.
I'll text her and let you know, yeah.
good. Well, I'm glad
we got that established.
Perfect. Now you're done. You're done, I guess. You had an interesting tweet thread, Steve, and you know, everybody saw the Brian Schmetzer and Bobby clip, and people have doubted Schmetz over the years, there's no doubt about it, and now he has sort of a resume and has had a resume that's, you can't really question it. So walk me through that kind of pregame story, through the game, afterwards, your relationship with Brian and how he was feeling before and after this match.
Yeah, so obviously everyone here in Seattle goes back with Brian a long way. I mean, he predates me. I mean, he's a guy who's from here. He played, you know, for the Sounders, played indoor here in the Washington area. He was the USL coach for the Sounders when I played back in the day. He was the assistant coach for Ziggy Schmidt, and then he got the head coaching job. So he's a Seattle guy through and through. And I think you speak to a lot of the players, a lot of the guys, and they'll say things like, you know, I love Brian, or I really care for Brian. It's because the kind of person he is, just he's a really good person. And I'm fortunate to have a great friendship with him. So we talk a lot about tactics and things like that. And I've always felt he doesn't get enough credit tactically for what he does. And a part of that maybe is because he deflects that attention away. So before the game, I was down on the pitch for warm-up, and he was sitting down in his seat and on the bench watching the team warm up. And I just sat by him and I said, you know, this may not be the right time to say this, but I'm going to say this anyway. We're about, what, 20 minutes from kickoff. And I said, you know, if you win tonight, this will be your third MLS Cup final appearance in four attempts. I said, if certain other coaches did that, nobody would stop talking about it. They'd be hailed as tactical geniuses. They'd be hailed as masterminds. And we don't really hear that noise for Schmidt outside of Seattle. I feel like people give the team a ton of credit, but not him. And I said to him, maybe it's because you're too nice. You ask Schmidt, you say, that was a great halftime adjustment. And he'll say, yes, my assistant coaches had something to do with it. Or he'll say, the guys on the pitch figured it out. He rarely takes the credit for himself. I think if he had more of that kind of persona, I think people probably would give him a lot of the credit he deserves, because three MLS Cup final appearances, that's very tough to argue. If he wins a second ring for the club as well, I think it's just going to be something where it's going to be undeniable for everyone outside of Seattle to begin to admit and see what we've already seen here and know in Seattle, I think.
So you mentioned Brian Schmetzer, 3 and 4 years, but that's the Sounders in general. Outside of Brian Schmetzer, what about this organization has allowed it to be so consistent? Because there has been changeover on the roster, has been changeover in the front office, and yet from 2016 now to 2019, 3 MLS Cups in 4 years.
Yeah, I think a ton of credit to Garth Lagerwey. I think him as well, he doesn't maybe get a credit. I mean, I was someone who went up against his Salt Lake teams and saw how him and Jason Christ built that club and franchise. And watching him here, I didn't know Garth before personally, but getting to know him as well, he can build a roster. He knows how to build a team that can withstand a lot, because, you know, Seattle have lost Chad Marshall, Ozzie Alonso, Clint Dempsey, Brad Evans, all in the past couple of years or so. And these are club icons. These are very key players. So I think the consistency here has been they've built a squad that can kind of, you know, last a season. Listen, over 34 games, the Sounders haven't necessarily been the best team over the past few years. But in the moments when they need it, they've got the performances. For example, I didn't know who Raul Ruiz Diaz was before he came here. But I can tell you, watching him, I don't think I've ever seen a striker like him inside the 18-yard box at this club ever. We've had some really good forwards here before. So I think they've just signed the right players. The chemistry on the team is great. They've got the right man in the head coaching job. And then from Adrian Hanawa down, the ownership group, they just know how to build a winning culture. It's a very, very high standard here. I remember always when I was in the locker room as a player, just if we lost the game, it just felt like the end of the world, because the standards here are so high, you expect to win every game, and I think that's continued.
Was Brian on one after this game? I mean, he's putting out selfies. we played his comments and, you know, the Bob comment and everything else. It just kind of felt like he was on a different level maybe than we normally see him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He was definitely fired up. He didn't actually say much in the locker room. He came in and Jovan Jones was pouring champagne on his head, and he was part of the celebration. He didn't actually, I didn't see him address the team in the locker room. He kind of just was one of the guys. He jumped into the celebrations as the assistant coaches and the ownership guys were in there. But I think he felt that he was in some ways vindicated, because there's been a lot of question marks around Seattle this season. And believe it or not, there's even people here who think he's not, you know, the right head coach for the club. And I think not just they beat LAFC the way they did it. I thought it was like a tactical masterclass, that he played it exactly how you should play against such a great team like LAFC. And then to win in that way, 3-1, after going a goal behind, going back to MLS Cup, having the chance to host, I think the emotions came over him. I didn't see the picture until the next day, because we flew back, you know, as with the team on the plane. And I didn't see it until the next day. Otherwise, I definitely would have put it up to him. But I thought it was a great picture, to be honest.
So just let us know, this game was won in October, and yet Jingle Bells was immediately the first thing that got sent out of this team celebrating. Why? What is going on?
Team tradition. I didn't know either. When I came to Seattle, we won our first ever away game as an MLS franchise in 2009 away at Toronto. and we got to the locker room. And then the guys who kind of were held over from the USL days, including Brian Schmetzer, and we had guys like Roger Levesque, Zach Scott, who were in the locker room. You know, they said this is a club tradition. It's a Sounders tradition going back to however long. And we do sing Jingle Bells with our own specific lyrics. And it's just something we've always done, always done. So it wasn't just winning the Western Conference Championship. I mean, it's every away game. You win away from home. It's what you do if you're on the Sounders. So it was fun. It was loud. Everyone was involved. This one obviously had a little bit more volume to it, but no, it was great.
I want to ask you about Zion, the Mercer Island Zion. And that's what we've been calling Jordan Morris, because this man just is – you can't match up with him right now. He had the ACL injury. He came back. He very obviously, Steve, and maybe you can confirm, lived in the weight room for a year. He's playing the best soccer of his career by far. What is he doing? You were a guy who terrorized people on the wings. How does he do it?
No, I'm so proud of him, because the thing is, with Jordan, we've known him for such a long time here. You know, everybody knows his dad is the Sounders doctor, and he's been around. So Jordan was in the academy. I remember watching him play back then and thinking, you know, how fast he was and how good he was. Then he went to Stanford and he went to the national team. And when he first came to Seattle under Ziggy Schmidt in 2015, I think, he was playing on the wing, but you could tell he wasn't comfortable. And then he really wanted to play up through the middle, but we had Clint Dempsey, and it was tough for him at the time. And I think when he came back this year, he knew number nine is Raul Ruiz Diaz. And Brian Schmetzer doesn't typically stray from the 4-2-3-1, so it's not going to be two guys up top. Many people, including myself, had combos with Jordan. All I said to him was, when I watch you play, I feel like you're a forward who's playing out on the wing, and that's tough. You have to learn to just be a winger, just think like a winger. And I think from me, and he's worked a lot with Gonzalo Pineda and Preki and those guys on the training pitch, they've just convinced him that when you lock in as a winger and you're going at someone, the right back, there's no one that can stop you. And I think also playing on the left. Jordan for a long time played on the right-hand side. He's not the same. He prefers the left. He's told us that. And he's just confident. You start scoring a couple of goals. You get a couple of assists. The team starts to believe in you more and more. They give you the ball. Game plans are built for you. I think he's just in a zone right now where he goes on the pitch and he knows he's going to impact the game. And the biggest thing I'll say for Jordan is this. There was a game against San Jose. It was the week before decision day. And he didn't play well. Jordan did not play well in that game. But in the 94th minute, he got a breakaway, he ran onto it, and he had a fantastic finish, and he won the team the game. In the past, Jordan had to be playing well to make a difference. I think the really good players can be quiet for 90 minutes, and then in injury time, they find a way to score. And he's now reaching that level. He's extremely confident, and we're just so happy for him here in Seattle.
Well, Steve, you talked about the vibe in Seattle. Like Goss, I'm going to be in market for MLS Cup.
Cool,
We're pretty excited. So kind of paint a picture of what MLS Cup is going to look like in Seattle.
It's going to be so amazing because, you know, I was fortunate to be at the two that we played in Toronto, and that was great. You can see what it does for a city. And in Seattle, we haven't had it. We have hosted it before, but that was the Galaxy in Salt Lake back in 2009. I just think that there's a lot, obviously, of diehard Sounders fans. You know they're going to be there anyway. But I have friends who maybe went to a game in 2014. You know, they've been to two games in the last couple of years who everyone's buying tickets. Everybody's buying tickets. They want to be a part of it. This is a sports town. We've seen the way they've got behind the Seahawks at times when they won a Super Bowl. So having a chance to now host here, I think, you know, I hope they open up the whole stadium. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I hope they do, because I think they can really feel it. The fans are going to sing like never before. But it's everyone. You'll see the rave green shirt, people wearing it in their workplaces. And it's just they're going to paint the town green. They're going to paint the town green. And it's going to be just maybe something that none of us can really put into words because we haven't had it before. But I can tell you for sure, waking up this morning and speaking with friends and walking around the city already, the excitement's real. It's a few days away still, but the excitement is real. Everybody's texts are blowing up. People are flying in. It's going to be a great, great spectacle. And I'm hoping they put me in charge of the after party if this morning because we're going to have a great time for sure.
Goss and I are invited.
Wow.
Obviously.
Is Oba coming?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I hope he's here.
Wow.
Let's go.
Wow. Here we go. Rub it in, all right. 3 p.m. Eastern, Sunday, November 10th, MLS Cup. Sounders host against Toronto FC, ABC, Univision, Turiene, TSN, TVA. Of course, Steve's going to be on the ground doing his thing. Follow him on Twitter, Zakawani11, or check him out on the Sounders broadcast or everywhere else he is appearing. Steve. Zach, Steve, whatever, going back and forth here. Thanks, man. I don't know what day it is. I'm sure you feel the same. Prepare for next Sunday, all right?
Yeah, thank you, guys. Been a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Well, that's a bummer for some of us to miss a Steve Zakuani party.
Oh, man, dude.
Well,
he did confirm that we'd be invited.
Yeah, it seemed that way.
It sounded like we were the main event.
It didn't sound that way.
I'll see
we were potentially co-hosting the party.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. No, that's not happening. All right, let's talk LAFC and the L word before we get to Atlanta-Toronto FC. Let's make this quick because we'll have all offseason to dissect LAFC, Bob Bradley, Carlos Vela, and everything they've accomplished. What is now their legacy? Like, how will people remember them? Is this going to be the overriding sort of like story, the climax of their story
if
gets remembered?
Yeah, if you care about truth, honesty, reality, then you see this team as the best MLS team ever. Simple as that. The best single season MLS team ever. Losing a single elimination game does not change that. Over 34, really 36 games, we'll say, they were the best team we've ever seen over the stretch of those games. And for the same reason that saying Michael Jordan's better than LeBron James because he won the five, even though LeBron's made, what, 10 now? Maybe Michael's better for other reasons. It's not for the championships. For the same reason that you can't talk about the Pats not being one of the great teams ever, not the greatest team ever, just because David Tyrell made the luckiest catch in the history of sports. This LAFC team is the best team we have ever seen in Major League Soccer, and this loss doesn't change that. Sometimes good, great, best teams lose in sports because that's what sports are, and end of conversation.
You're talking play. You're talking aesthetics. You're talking the way this
I'm talking
team
about the game
soccer.
Of soccer.
And yes,
no, it's because
playing,
and
winning.
Results came with that. Yeah, and results came with that.
Because if you play with a belief of the way the game should be played and it's beautiful and you lose every game 5-4, you're not one of the best teams ever. To do it and to do it effectively and to do it well and over the course of time that they did it for, one of the things that's going to be fascinating is in 2016, if you asked me 2 days before MLS Cup, I would have said that TFC team was arguably one of the best in MLS history. Then they lost and they rolled forward and had the best season in MLS history with that drive of like, we have to prove to everyone, we have to win everything, every single game. And now we talk about 2017 TFC. So the way this is going to end is if LAFC rolls through next year and Bob Bradley says, no one believes in you. Everyone thinks we can't get it done. We need to prove every single minute that we're the best team in MLS history. And they roll through and they win MLS Cup next year. Everything will be forgotten in terms of the way this year ended. And the legacy of this team, this group, whatever it is, if Rossi's still here or it's Rodriguez as a central figure, whatever it is, this group will be known as that group, this LAFC team in this span that set records and changed the way the game was played in MLS.
But that loss will sting a little bit, right? It'll stain it just a tad.
Absolutely. Well, and I that's a really good point, Goss, that you just make about,
hey, what about
that
my,
TFC.
Happens
Bobby,
what
excellent,
about my point?
Excellent point.
I didn't even wonder.
Everyone is
Bobby.
Full of excellent information here. But, you know, we don't necessarily talk about the TFC 2016 team that lost in MLS Cup final. We talk about the 2017 TFC team as now, you know, arguably being the best MLS team of all time. I think that, you know, I agree with what Bobby's saying about the over the course of the season that LAFC played beautiful football and were the best team. But I have, and I feel bad saying this because I have an issue with the season as a whole because I feel like the quality across the board in the league wasn't the highest this year. And so for LAFC to accumulate 72 points, there's a question in my head about whether it was easier for them to do that because there was such disparity in the league. They were that much better than so many of the other teams. And so there weren't as many teams that were as competitive against them. So they were able to accumulate all of these points, break the points record.
It's a fantastic point.
I have that question in my head. And so I can't say that they're the best team in MLS history. I think that they could be, to Goss's point. I think if they can come back next year and say and prove everybody wrong and say, look, this is we can do it and get it done in the playoffs and win MLS Cup, then yes. But right now, this 2019 LAFC team, for me, I think is going to be like a little... A footnote.
Yeah, look, I think it's the games of consequence that John Thornton talks about. Sorry, what did I do there?
I have no idea what you said.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't correct, but I couldn't repeat it.
It was a Trumpism. Whatever
games
you just did.
Oh,
Trump-esque.
No.
What? Get that out of here. You're off the show. Sorry, my throat is wrecked, man. Games of consequence is what John Thornton has called them.
Yeah.
And they've won very few of them.
So, but I can also throw out there, last year, 2018, San Jose was bottom of the Western Conference with 21 points. This year, it was Vancouver on 34 points. So it goes, I agree with you. I think in the middle this year, there wasn't, last year was Atlanta and New York pushing each other. You could argue that Seattle,
KC.
Sporting KC, they maybe didn't have those games, but I think the floor was higher and there was less easy games. And I think over the course of a year, you talk about games of consequence. If you're going to set a points record, you really only have two or three of those anyway, right? You're so much better than everyone. You're going to lose games, but you're so much better than everyone going into the game. There's very few, hey, this is the big one where we could really lose and we have to change what we do. And I don't know that that changed much for LAFC because they hosted Atlanta. You know, they played NYCFC. They hosted the Red Bulls in a wild game. Well, they hosted Seattle.
Well, like, the question
still
is,
had
is
to
Atlanta,
play strong
Atlanta
team.
Wasn't as good as they were last year. Like,
maybe.
NYCFC was maybe the only team in the sort of similar echelon.
But we're talking about one or two games is what I'm saying, which could be the difference between 70
sure.
and 72
I'm
points.
I'm talking about like the eight teams behind that that just weren't as good. I don't think collectively, you can argue that individually the talent in the league was better, but I'm not sure that collectively they were better, which is where I'm with you, Susanna,
yeah.
where it was just like, they just teams just didn't quite have it all together. And that's never been the case with MLS. It's never the case in any league around the world. But for whatever reason this year, it just felt like there was some,
I think there's some recency bias in there.
There very well might be.
Philadelphia Union were sixth in the East last year. Were they that much different than what DC United was this year?
Were they that much better
than they were
last year? They were better, but how much better?
This year?
Yeah.
They were a lot better.
I agree, but like, what's the degree and how does it match up to who?
You're saying they improved
in
the standings because the league got worse.
Yeah, I'm not sure that some of the other teams in there were any. Like DC was noticeably worse. Columbus was completely missing. Unlike years past, Montreal was gone. Like
everybody was worse.
Red Bulls were nowhere close to what they have been in the past. Toronto FC were only that good at the end of the season.
The Union,
I don't know. It just didn't feel like the top level was as high, and the mid level wasn't as high, and then kind of trickles down. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Let us know what you think. We do have to talk about Atlanta United, and I'm sure there are some Atlanta United fans screaming about that. But actually, we're going to talk about Toronto FC.
Ooh.
Upset special, baby. This is your wheelhouse, Dave. You have covered this team. You're practically Canadian at this point.
God, I wish
you,
it was true. That, from your words,
I'm
you,
still reeling from the Trump.
Justin
thing.
Trudeau's.
You're the one that did it, Andrew.
Well, I didn't say it.
Moving on from that, everything we've said about Seattle in terms of knowing the moment, ability to step up, all that stuff, I think Toronto was times five this week. And probably this entire playoff run of just understanding everything it takes to get through a playoff series and then just having this belief that we're gonna win because we've been here before, we've done it before, we know exactly what it takes. It doesn't matter what you tell us, it doesn't matter where it is, it doesn't matter who we're playing against. I thought Greg Vanney was incredible against NYCFC. I thought he had a good day again, but this goes down to the players in Atlanta of just believing that it was gonna work. I mean, they should have been 2-0 down, maybe even a man down.
Well, that's the
10
part,
minutes
that's
in.
The part where I'm like, when you say that, oh, we knew we were going to win, then what the hell were they doing for the first 20 minutes running around with their head, like chickens with their head cut
for
off,
sure.
Like, trying to get red cards?
They ran around like chickens with their head cut off the entire game. They just happened to make plays with their head off for the last 70 minutes.
And that goes to a lot of teams never recover, and they run around that way for 90 minutes, and they don't make the plays, or there's no idea inside the team that this will end up working out. I mean, you looked at this team over the last 2 weeks and just asked where the goal is going to come from. And yet they put up four, two against NYCFC and two against Atlanta, who hadn't given up a goal in the postseason, from Nick DeLeon and Benazee. Not saying those are bad players, but this is a team that was Jovinko and Josie and Victor Vasquez, and now this is what you get. But they knew at some point it would happen. So I think there's tactical conversation you can have, but this to me the most goes down to all of the intangibles that occur with this group, and it's made it so that no one could really anticipate that it's coming, except I guess Bobby. And all of what Bobby was saying throughout the season was the intangibles. You go into a playoff series where you're the home team, they believe they're going to win. There are a lot of teams in MLS who don't genuinely believe they're going to pull it out, who don't go toe-to-toe for 90 minutes because they've mentally never been there before, so they turn off for 5 minutes. They turn off for 3 minutes here. TFC did that in the first 3 minutes, which it turns out is the best 3 minutes to turn off. And then they picked it up. And so, yeah, I just think when you look at this group and what they've done, this goes down to all of the like belief, heart of a champion, blah, 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 which I don't believe in all the time.
Kind of has to.
But you saw it.
Because they didn't have Josie and they didn't have Omar, who are two, maybe their two most talented, quote unquote, players.
At least on their levels, right? In terms of defender, midfield, forward, Omar's their best defender and most important, Josie's their best forward.
Everybody sat around here and certainly at this table at Matchday Central and every time we talked about this team said, not without Josie.
Yeah.
Not without Josie. And they may not get Josie back. We'll see. Greg Vanney said after this victory against Atlanta, quote, I'm very optimistic now, gaining 10 days, Josie will be in the fold. You take that for what
they
you will.
They said he was going to play going into the playoffs.
That was very...
Did you see Josie's interview with Katie, though?
No, what'd he say?
He said that he was like, this is a cup final. He was like, injured or not, it's going to be really hard for me to stay away from this game. He gave every...
He also said that going into the first playoff.
I'm just saying he gave every indication.
Yeah, Josie.
It's an MLS Cup final.
Yeah. You would think that he would do everything he can.
I'm telling you this.
And Sloan was with him. So, you know, she's now.
Shout out Sloan.
Exactly. She's got to look, you know.
Yeah.
But I would
be held accountable.
But I would say for Toronto FC, they are going to play this game every single day for the next 10 days of will he, won't he, will he, won't he, will he, won't he. Because it does is feed into an advantage of Seattle doesn't know what they're going
to
get.
Kinda, I mean, it's like to a much larger extent than, do you remember 2015, Kai Kamara?
When he went down.
Wasn't 10 days. It was the day before. And it was like, oh, Kai Kamara went down in training. What will the crew do? And then it turned out it was probably them just like yanking our chains.
And he played 90 minutes and scored a goal.
Yeah, completely fine. No problems. Quentin Westberg stopped a PK in this one.
That was amazing. I had the same reaction.
That was not a PK, man. Not going to say it's a yellow card for a dive, but it was a dive.
I had the same reaction to that save as I did immediately after Seattle scored their first goal and equalized. Because in Atlanta, you could tell, even just watching it on TV, like the air got sucked out of the building. And as soon as that happened, I was like, Toronto's going to win this game. Like that, because that would have been such a dagger and just a gut punch for Toronto. And as soon as he saved that, I was like, oh, nope, there we go. Toronto's going to win this game. And you could just kind of tell it at the bends that it was just like.
It's kind of been that kind of season for Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, even despite the fact that they finished second in the Eastern Conference, like it's always kind of been like, oh, we're rolling along, but the wheels are off kilter.
Yeah.
Like one might pop off and go flying.
Yep.
This could end badly. And I think some of the pre-game sort of like blitz of bravado from Five Stripes folks out there was them being like, oh, we might have got past all that. Like, we might have survived all this.
I think it's just their natural state, personally.
Oh, okay.
What's really interesting, too, is that, like, in the early rounds, we saw how big home field was. And then in the Eastern and Western Conference Final, two upsets at very hard places to play. I think it's really interesting.
On five goals from outside the box. All five from outside the box.
So interesting.
Now, Nick De Leon... You know, it's easier to score outside the box if nobody.
Hey, did we queue up the interview that some intrepid reporter did at BMO Field 2 weeks ago in Nick De Leon, where it's like, "Whoa, you only show up for the playoffs?" And he's like, "I'm a big game player." We're checking the background. Okay, cool. I don't know the name of the reporter. I think the last name is Gas, but I'm not sure.
Gas.
Does he wear plaid? Is he very becoming in plaid?
I'm dressed up for Halloween as a hipster who ironically didn't dress up for Halloween.
This is being ironic. You're Canadian. This is just what you wear normally.
It's also very Seattle, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look, you got to defend.
I'm neutral.
You have to defend. Like, nobody watched Nick De Leon. What happened to Atlanta in this game, Bobby? What was missing?
Ideas, a plan. Atlanta blew this one, right? All credit to Toronto and the world. They worked their butts off behind the eight ball as the underdogs without two key players, and they did everything they could do to give themselves a chance. It shouldn't have been enough, right? There's no other way to put it. There's a place in sports to say all credit to the team that won, but in reality, it should not have been enough. Atlanta with PT and Barco and Joseph and Nagby and Gressel. If you go back and watch the tape of this game, Toronto are all over the place, right? Maybe it was by design because they just wanted to do something funky and confuse Atlanta, but they were all over the place. There is no person that would watch Toronto's defensive shape and say, good job. Right, it's not a thing that would happen in this world, but it worked, and it worked because Atlanta was not on the same page. It was individual action after individual action, and when you do that, you expect your $15 million Argentine U20, U23 star, you expect your South American Player of the Year, you expect the guy, and I love Julian Gressel, and he has made big play after big play, but you expect the guy who's going for a big contract
to make that play, and they just didn't. Do I think it's their fault as much as whatever happened with the game plan and the ideas throughout the year with that team? No, they should have been more prepared for this moment. So it wasn't individual action. It was, let's actually just move the ball side to side three times because TFC are going to chase us and there's going to be a giant stinking gap to the side of Michael Bradley and we can exploit it. Or we can pull a center back out like we did for the two opportunities. And they just didn't do it. Atlanta should feel disheartened, very upset with the way this played out.
Two trophies still. Campione's Cup, U.S. Open Cup. They will go to CCL. Sounders will go to CCL too, no matter what. Toronto FC might have reason to have a beef with that. Montreal won the Canadian Championship, so they did have their opportunity, Dave. But you kind of embarked on a rant that I now want to like light the fuse on.
You want to pull it out of me.
Can we say that Goss is the low-key best rant?
Yeah, I just like to save them off the air because I am from New York, so I have trouble keeping them clean for air. But I'm going to make an attempt here in that Major League Soccer as a league, part of CONCACAF, the champion of their league won't be in CCL next year. And I don't think that...
If Toronto win it.
If Toronto win it. And I understand Toronto had a chance in the Canadian Championship. You have to win less games in the Canadian Championship than Open Cup. There's less of a pool. There's only three MLS teams in Canada. So they have a better opportunity, you could say, than American teams to get through an Open Cup. But if you want all of this to matter the way it should be, and you want to win CCL, which means you want your best teams in it, it's MLS's decision. I know CONCACAF is a part of this, but CONCACAF doesn't care. You're putting teams in from your league. If Toronto wins this league, they've deserved to be in CCL. And I think rather than have this spot, so it would go to Seattle if they lose.
It goes to Seattle no matter what.
Right,
Seattle will
because
be going.
They had the best record because the teams ahead of them all clinched with better records through other means, whether it was Open
but
Cup.
But isn't that the pushback against your argument here is that Toronto had that? Well, I guess they didn't because they would have been
if
held
If New
out.
England yeah. Revolution
they
won
could have
MLS Cup.
Higher than Seattle and they still wouldn't
exactly.
have.
Exactly. Right. And okay. so it's just, there's to me, there's no reason for it. I understand it's something you have to deal with at an international level with the Federation. I believe there are other countries where, you know, teams from other or other leagues where teams from other countries playing them, England and Wales and all that stuff. And I don't really care about any of that. It doesn't matter to me, Spain as well. But Toronto FC, if they are MLS Cup champions, should be in CCL next year. There's no explanation around it, and there's no reason for it not to happen. And I think it undervalues what they're going to accomplish because they're not given that same opportunity.
You know what your dream job should be, David?
Mm-hmm.
Ambassador to CONCACAF. I don't know if that's a job.
Does it come with a residence?
You could create it.
It feels like it should have a residence in Panama. Where would
no. It would probably be St. Kitts and Nevis, the smallest sovereign nation in the Western Hemisphere, both in population and land size.
Oh, my.
What up, St. Kitts?
Oh, exactly.
Somebody,
resume
dropped. Hit Wikipedia.
That's the sort of knowledge that only the CONCACAF ambassador would have. I just got to say.
CONCACAF, so, call me.
Anything else on Atlanta, Toronto? Anything you feeling? I mean, I think right now we would like to get to the mailbag, but I would like Atlanta fans or LAFC fans or outside of that
to
hit us up.
Yeah, we got some time coming up.
Are you guys excited? Are you excited for this cup final?
I am. Yeah, I am. Yeah. I'm not as excited as he is because I think I'm still in the 24 hours after where I'm like, same matchup again.
Yeah.
But that's really just sort of a visceral, like, oh, we've done this before sort of thing. I don't think it'll actually take away from the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll still be good.
Yeah.
So I hope it's better, certainly, than 2016. Please.
Please just be less cold.
I'm excited to go to Seattle.
Yeah.
We can sit. People think that I love the city of Seattle and they deserve an MLS Cup. As a fan base, they have come out for 10 plus years now.
They've come out for MLS Cup finals that they didn't play in.
Right. As a group and a city, they deserve to have this occasion in their own stadium.
It's a great place to have MLS Cup.
For that
reason. Yeah. You always want, and because they'll make it an event.
Absolutely.
You know, when you walk into like Atlanta last year, Toronto the years before that, it was like, this city cares. Yeah. Everybody cares. Your cab driver knows. The people around you know. When you say you work for MLS, they're like, oh man, I'm trying to get tickets. I haven't been able to do it. That's usually the way it happens. Yeah. And they're like, you got any hookups or what's up?
And to throw on, I think Steve Zaccone mentioned it, but we haven't mentioned Adrian Hanauer's name yet. Structure matters. Organization matters. We've seen it in all those teams that he named of great teams in other sports. So credit to both sides, MLSE as well as Adrian Hanauer, just believing in the people that got them there at one point, that they understood what they were doing. Because let's all be real. Greg Vanney was under pressure coming into the postseason.
Yeah.
There have been rumors throughout the year that he could be in trouble because of what happened last year. He has been to three MLS Cups in 4 years. We've talked about it on Brian Schmetzer's side, and Vanney did it changing his tactics in 2016 to get everything to fit together, to get there, lost, then figured it out in 2017 of how to throw a curveball to get Seattle off their game, to get his team over the hump. 2018, he went to a CCL final. So if you want to look at it, four finals in 4 years. And then in 2019, he did enough when it didn't feel like they had the legs. They weren't going to get the rest. They didn't have the horses with Josie out and with all of that. And he did enough to get his team over the edge.
Okay, let's do the mailbag. I do have a couple corrections. And this is a tradition I'd like to start, Anders. So if you would like to continue it.
It's David Tyree for one.
Yes.
What did I say?
That was one of them. That's Tyrell, one from, yep. David Tyree made the catch in the Super Bowl.
Nicholas Lodero, 7 goals, 6
and
assists.
It shows
yes. What is he sending these to you? What?
No, he says them in my ear. Oh. I just ignore him.
Wow.
He goes, you should correct him because Lodero shouldn't be short shrift. And I was like, I think Lodero's about to win 2 MLS Cups potentially. So I think he's good with whatever Weedy says.
Okay. I didn't mess that one up. Yeah. Whatever.
It's just how we roll.
Let's go to the mailbag.
Where do you want to go? Because I would say a lot of people liked jumping on the graves of LAFC. A lot of people are pro Schmetzer on this as well.
Give me the entertainment rankings.
I'm going to say this real quick.
What are the best ones?
I'm going to say this real quick. Cement the fact that LAFC were amazing, that they were better than everyone else just because they didn't win, because that will be important for this league. We need more LAFC. Take every trait that they did. We need more of it. Your team would be better for it. The league would be better for it. Remember that fact.
Off the back of that, let me ask you this question then. Was it the biggest choke in MLS history?
No, because they didn't lose that game. They played fine. Were they great? No. Seattle were fantastic. Seattle deserves the credit. To your point, it was not a choke. It was Seattle stepping up on a single night.
Okay, I'll close out on this one. Real simple. Paul from Houston. What does Weeby do to cope with the inferiority he must feel sitting on Matchday Central with Kalen, Charlie, and Dax?
Ooh, what?
Well, I just...
Paul from Houston, baby!
Yeah, I just take solace in the fact that they can't talk unless I ask them to.
The gatekeeper.
Yeah. I'll get one more question.
Yeah, come on. Let's get some more. There's no reason for us to rush out.
Oh, I thought you guys were rushing out. Okay. Would Raul Ruiz Diaz put up MVP caliber numbers if he played in a system that worked the ball to his part of the field more? A few games a year, he looks like one of the smartest, fiercest, most clinical strikers in the league, capable of doing anything Joseph can, but usually Seattle's offense runs through Lodero and then out wide to Morris on the break.
I just want to say, I think the internet has strictly banned me from trying to talk about the Sounders system.
Cool. So one of you guys. That's from Gabe Schenker.
If he played in a different system.
Yeah.
I mean, he did. He basically did that in Mexico, didn't he?
Sure.
Yeah. I think he has the capability to be a 20-plus goal scorer, no doubt about it. I mean, he just doesn't have to be. He was out with injuries this year, too, for a little while. So it wasn't like, oh, he played 34 games, 90 minutes. He just didn't get up to the numbers that he wanted. Like, he's always had this talent. That's why you went and paid $8 million for it. And to go to Bobby's point on LAFC and the point about these four teams, everybody should be looking at them saying, how do we catch up with them? How do we do what they do? Because how many teams in this league were able to go out and sign a Nico Lodero at 27? None, except for the Sounders. Raul Ruiz Diaz, they spent like $9-10 million on this guy. Like, if you want to compete and you want to talk trash about the Sounders throughout this year, well, you're going to have to match him with talent. And to do that, you're going to have to spend. And to do that, you're going to have to go to your academy, which they're going to have a raft of youth internationals running through very, very soon, straight into the first team, and invest in it, and invest in your coaches, and make the right decisions with your role players, and get Gustav Svensson, and develop Christian Roldan, who you drafted in the late parts of the first round. Yada, yada, yada. Like, all these teams are doing things that everybody else should be trying to do, and many are not doing.
David Wright in Tennessee wants to know when Will Ferrell started looking like Bob Bradley.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that threw me.
Yeah, you
that
did
totally
that interview.
Threw me. I was, and then I was like, "Is this?
Did he talk
is
like
this
him?
For a, is this for a role? Like what?
I was like, oh, I'm not gonna. Do
I know.
It.
I
after
Bob
Sebi, I'm not gonna do it.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like a solidarity with Bob kind of move, or he's preparing
did he,
for.
He, did
a
he use football
role?
Over soccer? Or?
I can't remember if he
That's
even
a telltale
that.
Sign.
Susanna used football today, and you could tell she's been around LAFC a lot over the last 2 weeks.
No, he was so great though. He's so informed. I love him. I was a little bummed we couldn't repeat the interview that LAFC didn't win because I felt like we really established a rapport.
Yeah, I feel like you guys are starting to become a comedy
duo. I know.
It's LA. You know, you make connections.
Guys,
you never,
this is what happens.
Yeah, never
John
know.
John C. Riley, take a seat.
Anything else good?
Two on Bob Bradley coaching. So Daniel says, one of the coaching tactics Bob didn't get enough credit for was using Dio and Christian Ramirez in that baseball-style platoon at forward. He realized it wasn't about their individual ability or their finishing. It was about spacing and the way they affected the game. It might sound crazy, but this team wasn't the same once they traded Christian Ramirez. How much of that was a big part of them losing?
I don't think it was a huge part at all. I wouldn't point to that in any way as to whether they lost or not. Was it really difficult to have Dio walk away for a month? And like the most important part of your season?
What would it have been if Christian Ramirez was starting in those games?
I mean, come on. Is it better to have Christian Ramirez there or Carlos Vela there and Brian Rodriguez on the wing? Like, I think it's probably better to have Vela up top and Brian Rodriguez.
The bigger variable here is the way teams played against them.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Teams just had better game plans. Bob Bradley made them raise their level.
But teams had better game plans because they knew, stepping on the field, what they were going up against. There was no question mark going into the game.
And you're going to say there was variability when Christian Ramirez was
I don't think
he's,
well, he could start or he could not start.
But he's not going to get in, he's not going to be the guy that gets in behind, is he? Yeah.
No, but he's going to hold hold up the ball and occupy center backs like Vela didn't. Okay.
I think the bigger variable here is that Dio left for whatever reason it was for him personally,
mm-hmm.
and their midfield at this roughly the same time was sort of like missing a balance, and then Marc-Anthony Kay got hurt, and then they just, you know, in a one game playoff system, that can matter.
I'll close you out on this. Bill Carroll, legend, in Red Bull Section 132. He said, the only one with the courage to ask this question, but he now asked it, so I'm going to ask you guys anyway, to Bob Bradley, would have been Simon Borg, but why is it that the best player in the league didn't take any free kicks coming down the end of this game against, you know, staring at the ability to be knocked out?
I mean, Atuesta did hit one. So...
sure did.
Did we think, I mean, look, the whole thing, this is how we'll end it. Sebi asked Bob about Carlos's big game sort of performances in the past and how whether he got over that against the Galaxy. Is there any blame to be laid at Carlos Vela's feet for this defeat? Bobby, you said they played fine, but they didn't get the results from their individual players that they would normally expect to get when they play fine. Is there any sort of like... is there anything in you that looks at Carlos Vela and says, man, he should have been better, he could have been better?
It's not blame, and maybe you guys have a better word for this. There's accountability in the same way that I said PT and Barco and Gressel and Nagby and those guys have accountability for what happened with Atlanta and big games. At some point, you need that moment. Nick De Leon did the moment. Nicolas Benazet did the moment. At some point, you need that. Rui Diaz and Ladero did it. But is it, do you blame someone for not doing the spectacular when the other team was very good? I would say no.
I'm with Bobby on that one. They were all over him. I mean, yeah. He didn't have moments because he couldn't find one. They were manhandling.
And we didn't talk about Latif leaving early in this game either, which is yet another wrench sort of thrown in their normal, like, dominant machine. Mm-hmm. But Rossi didn't show up. I would look more at Rossi, and maybe it was a game plan thing as opposed to an individual thing.
Wrong spot for Bob. Bob put him in the wrong role for that game.
Yep. He didn't impact the game at all, and Rodriguez was very similar. And then Dio's coming on just trying to, you know, they're already being suffocated at that point. They're gasping for air.
I just want to break that. Did we talk about Bob and Sebi yet? Did you do that yet, Andrew?
Yeah, we did that.
We did it. Yeah. Okay. Do you have any thoughts? I'd take your thoughts.
I wanted Susanna's thoughts because I'm of the opinion. And it same goes with the earthquake shutting down their locker room last month. Just when these things happen, that I think it's good, right? There's this idea that there's this righteousness that these things, you know, live up to a certain level. I didn't think Bob was being a jerk per se. I thought he was in the moment. I thought it was sports. Maybe he was a little bit rude. I think these things are good, and the league and sports would be better. The whole thing with Greg Popovich and how announcers or sideline reporters are mad at him for not giving information. Greg Popovich, sideline, do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
of course. How Pop doesn't give any... like, I watch those more than I watch anybody else,
mm-hmm.
right? Doing something is better than doing status quo for me. So was it abrupt to see what Bob did? Yes, but I don't think that he should be derided. I don't think he should have to apologize. I wish more coaches felt... that was okay to just...
I don't mind the reaction of it, the gut reaction of it. What I found incredibly disrespectful was the get lost. You know, like it was...
talking down?
Exactly. There was a level of condescension there from Bob. Like, Sebi didn't know what he's talking about. And we all know Sebastian Salazar is one of the most prepared reporters ever. And though even the way he phrased the question was entirely fair, there was a lack of respect from Bob in telling him to get lost. Like your question is ridiculous and not worthy of even being answered. I have no problem with Bob not wanting to answer or actually him just saying, you know what? I think that's a lousy question.
Or unfair.
Or unfair.
Yeah, whatever it is, whatever he
totally
wants to
fine. I love. Yeah, anytime you can elicit a very candid emotional reaction, that's great. As a reporter, as a sideline reporter, like, you live for those moments. But there was a lack of respect that would have rubbed me the wrong way had I been in Seve's position.
Bobby's dream world is Bob Bradley and Carl Anthony Towns' mentions on Instagram.
Yeah,
just trying to build MLS to that point.
That's what makes the NBA so great is they are themselves. You know, people ask me, how did I feel about Brian Schmetzer calling out the not the inaccuracy, but the fact that he got the upper hand. Thought it was awesome, man.
Yeah.
Like, they should do that, right? Unfortunately, they don't always get to have that pen that the media do. Be yourself. If you're pissed, good for Adrian Heath. I think he was dead wrong and somewhat stupid in what he said all year. But good for you, man. Be yourself. Defend your people. That was what that for me is one of the next evolutions of this league, is personality from the main protagonist.
We have two shows next week to lead into MLS Cup 24, 3 p.m. Eastern, November 10th, ABC, Univision, TSN, TVA. It's going to be awesome. It is a rematch, the third time in 4 years. Sounders and Toronto FC will get together. 401-206-0MLS. Please text us, extratime@mlssoccer.com. That's our email.
We got a ton, so we have two shows now to use a lot of this.
And if you have suggestions on how we should preview this, you know, that's fine too. Actually, one thing before we go. Bobby, we were watching that interview, obviously, in the studio over here. And we just, like, lost it rewound it, like, 15 times. We're like, did he actually just say, ask Bobby Warshaw? Before we get out of here, I want to know where you were and what your reaction was. And how many text messages you've gotten over the last 48 hours.
I was sitting on my couch, and actually my Amazon Fire Stick is on delay. So I probably got 5 or 6 texts before I even saw it. And my reaction was, good for Brian. You win. You win this one. You know? I like him. I think he's a good dude. He wins. What else am I going to say?
Two winners, Toronto and Seattle. They'll face off for MLS Cup, the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy. We are out of
Billy
here.
Billy Powell.
Yes, sir. Have a great weekend, everybody. Going to try to get my voice back and recover from Paul and Houston's burn. See ya.